Yeah, let the big dog hunt. Hello again, everybody. 4 o'clock here, straight up at 97.5. The Fanatic, I'm Joe Stazak. Taking over for the great Rob Motti. Did the last 4 hours. Did the 4 hours with him yesterday over Parks Casino. Had a great time. Tyler Zuli in the house. Producing this very fine program. We're taking you up to the All-Star Game in Chicago tonight. Sixers obviously still on break. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the festivities going around the All-Star break. Not without its controversy. We'll get into a little bit of the slam dunk contest. Last night, of course, the Sixers enjoying a little bit of time off. The big if, as Rob and I have dubbed Joel Embiid. He's playing tonight along with Ben Simmons. We'll see if he doesn't miss the next 8 games like he did last year. And we'll see what his priorities are as the Sixers move forward. We will also be talking about that ridiculous interview by Carlos Correa, the shortstop of the Astros, defending the cause. I'm sorry, I can't get enough of it. I need to see more of the. I need to see, like, you know, the sequel to that interview with Ken Rosenthal. I can't get enough of it. It was like listening to what's his name? Misremembering thing. Roger Clemens back in the day when he kept talking about misremembering things, which, by the way, is a word. I looked it up because I thought he just made up that word and it became synonymous with him. You can't make up some of the things Carlos Correa was, some of the alibis he was using for his teammates and the unfinished tattoo, and his wife doesn't like to see Altuve without a shirt on. Some of these ridiculous, ridiculous excuses for the cheating scandal. Of course, Rob Manfred defended his punishment of the players and what they did and the Astros and what fines and suspensions and the front office setbacks that happened and what did or did not happen to the players. And that's still a whole mess. What's going to happen now? What kind of retribution can we expect? You know, the players are going to want to, you know, certainly police themselves here. Hey, listen, hey, if I was a player, I would feel well within my rights to exact some kind of, you know, try to make the universe a little bit more balanced. You know, hey, listen, if you guys aren't going to get pinched for, you know, cheating and trying to, you know, cheating me out of a contract, cheating me out of an award, cheating me out of a championship, well, then we're just going to have some fun this year, all right? And you're going to take it. And good luck to your ear hole, because you're going to have a fastball sticking in there about every third pitch. So that's going to happen a lot this year. That's going to be interesting. I want to talk a little bit more about scandals and what the punishment could have been, because I don't remember a scandal this big that did not punish one of the participants. Not one of the players has been punished for cheating. Now, obviously, the management was involved, although A.J. Hinch, the general manager, or former manager, I should say, of the Astros, says he tried to stop it. Obviously, he didn't try too hard. But, you know, the players, at the end of the day, are the ones to decide, yeah, well, I'll take a little help here. Listen, they could have denied it. They could have said, no, I don't need any help. Don't bang the trash can. I'm good. I'm going to just go out there and be good. I think only one player did. A guy who got called up in 2017. Can't remember his name. He said no to it. Other than that, everyone indulged, everyone was complicit, and not one of them have been punished since. But Carlos Correa, he really outdid himself in this interview. You have to check it out. It's all over the web. Shortstop Carlos Correa of the Astros, his interview, I think it was with Ken Rosenthal. It's in its entirety talking about or trying to make excuses or alibis for some of the things that the Astros did or did not do during the whole cheating, sign-stealing scandals. And Red Sox kind of gotten a little, have kind of flown under the radar here a little bit, because they were certainly caught up in some of this as well, and they won a championship in 2018. Of course, not one player from that squad has been punished either. And of course, Alex Cora, who was a bench coach for the Astros at the time and then the manager of the Red Sox when they won the championship, is kind of the he was on both teams, both organizations, and got caught in both scandals. So he's got a problem, and maybe two of his rings are tainted. I don't know. I've said before, I would not vacate. I'm not big on vacating I saw it happen. They won. They weren't caught at the time. If you're caught at the time, that's one thing. It's in retro. I get it. I understand the people who want to vacate these things, but it's like these college games, like UMass. Did UMass not make the Final Four back in 1990 with Marcus Camby and that crew? Yeah, they did. I've seen the Fab Five. I was at the Final Four in New Orleans in 93. Believe me, I saw them go to the title game. I saw the Weber timeout. Those games not happen? Did I miss something? All of a sudden, those games did not exist. They happen. It's part of history. Sometimes we do our best to police the situation as it's going on. We can't be everywhere. Not everyone can be everywhere. Things happen. Things slip through the cracks. Things come up later. Sorry, if you don't catch it here, then you lose. So I never believed in vacating anything, but I know people are on board with that, vacating the Astros 2017 ring, the Red Sox 2018 ring. And then what happens? You give the ring back to the Dodgers the year the Red Sox won it. The Houston Astros won it. I mean, does the second place team now become a champion? And how ridiculous is that? You're going to have a parade? You're going to have a parade for that team? Claret? Just first name. Claret. Played for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Maurice Claret. That's right. Yeah, he got in all kinds of trouble after the Fiesta Bowl where Ohio State won in triple overtime over Miami in 2002. It came out. Maybe they should vacate. The whole thing was a debacle anyway. There's a whole side story to the interference call after the whistle, and they lost. Miami had won, and then they lost. But then there's talk of vacating that and giving it back to Miami. I didn't want it. Keep your ring. I don't want to take a ring that way. Keep it. We were already jobbed. We don't need to then kind of make things worse by taking a ring that wasn't necessarily ours, although it was ours in the first place because your guy's running around with guns and doing things on campus and off campus and whatnot. I saw him play. He picked his game up in overtime, scored two touchdowns, all right? Maurice Claret, along with Craig Krenzel, rushed for about 185 yards, and that was the only thing those that team did right that game. They won the game. That's it. I ain't taking a ring for it. So, I mean, there's so many trickle-down consequences of these vacating these games. Just not a big fan of it. I know some people are. That's fine, and that's all well and good. Knock yourself out. What else is going on? Again, the Sixers are on break. They are fifth in the East right now. The big if is always a big question mark. He's going up against Ben Simmons tonight. I'm hoping upon hope he does not get injured. Last year he played, probably shouldn't have played, missed the next eight games. He's not the most mature guy around. We've talked about that. We'll talk about that a little bit more in terms of policing himself and knowing when to sit, knowing when to rest his body, knowing how to take care of his body. But the bigger question I have, and Rob Motti and I hashed this out yesterday, is his intensity, his effort, his desire. When he flips that switch, we're all good. I'm good with Joel Embiid when he flips that switch. But the question is, when will he flip that switch? How will we know when the switch gets flipped? At what situation, what occurrence needs to happen for him to flip that switch? Because he doesn't flip the switch every night. He doesn't play like that every night. He doesn't play like the Greek freak. He doesn't have that intensity. He doesn't have that desire. He doesn't have that eye of the tiger. He doesn't have that fire. He doesn't have that nastiness. He doesn't have that blankness of a killer or of an assassin. Yeah, he just doesn't. And that's why I think it's a flawed team. And unfortunately, and people, I still hear people say, well, they can still win the East. And, you know, if they get it together and they make their run and they play like they can. Guys, how many things do they need to have more flawed for you to see that it's a flawed team? And things really, a lot of things really have to come together for this team to become a team to be reckoned with, a team that can be a real threat to win the East, a real threat to win the whole thing. They are flawed up and down. And it's unfortunate, and we were asked yesterday if the process worked or didn't work. I say it's ongoing. It's incomplete right now because they have two of the key pieces that have come from the process still in the mix and very transcendental pieces in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, but they're flawed. They're flawed. The rest of the team's flawed. They swung and they missed on a few potential other pieces that did not help the execution of the process. But, you know, right now they have a big man who's the face of the franchise who doesn't show up to play every night. He's hurt. He's hurt like a third of the times. He spends too much time on social media. Now he's getting into it with the fans. He doesn't bring his A game every night. You have a point guard who can't shoot, nor will he shoot. You have a coach that will not demand that he gets better by expanding his game, which we've all been led to believe he was doing in the offseason. They have a backup center, or maybe a number four, in Al Horford, who came here from Boston, much heralded, but he's 32 years old. He's looking slow. He's looking old. Josh Richardson seems to be the de facto leader of this team. He was kind of thrown in the Jimmy Butler deal. He's been here for a cup of coffee. Now he's holding player-only meetings. And you have Tobias Harris, one of the most ridiculously overrated max players in the history of the planet. He's a good player. I'd say, yeah, he's a good player. He's not worth more money than Kawhi is, and he's getting paid more than Kawhi Leonard, and he's not near Kawhi Leonard, and he's inconsistent. Sometimes he can shoot, and sometimes he can't, and he's an okay player. He's okay. He's okay to good, all right? And he's a good player. He's not your max guy, but that is your max guy. You know, and they have a coach who, again, I will say again, I hate calling for guys' jobs, but I think it's time to move on from the coach. I don't think they'll do that in season, but I think they should at the end of the season. Certainly, if they get bounced in the first or second round, if they make it to the finals, the conference finals, and it's the way they make it and the way they respond and the way they play and the fact that they almost make it to the actual finals, then we'll reconsider. But I don't think any of that's going to happen. So I think Brett Brown is enjoying his last few games as the Sixer head coach. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stajak. I'm in the house till 8 o'clock tonight. All-Star game tonight from Chicago. Of course, everyone's showing up for training camp or spring training, I should say. Bryce Harper had an interview. His wife also chimed in and kind of expressed her concern. If the Phillies did enough this offseason, I'll throw that question out to you. Do you think they did enough this offseason? I personally don't. However, what is enough? I mean, what's enough? We don't know. We don't know what will translate. Just spending money doesn't always translate to wins and losses. It doesn't. I know we all wanted Bryce Harper here. I wanted Bryce Harper here. I don't know anyone who didn't want Bryce Harper here. It's not my money. It's not your money. It's John Middleton's money if he wants to spend stupid money. And I think it is stupid money because oftentimes these big splashes, these big free agent signings don't equate to wins. They don't equate to championships. You know, the Phillies, in going out and signing Bryce Harper to a $330 million deal over 13 years, improved, wait for it, one game last year. One game. They improved one game. They were 80-82 the year before. They were 81-81 last year with Bryce Harper. Now, I know they had a lot of injuries and whatnot, but if you look around at some of the other big free agent signings you've seen throughout the history of the game and the league, I mean, the big contract the Rangers gave A-Rod at the time was like the biggest contract in North American history, 10 years, $250 million, did nothing for the Rangers. Manny Machado, I believe him signing with the Padres increased the Padres' record four more wins over the previous year. Albert Pujols, after the Cardinals won the whole thing in 2011, gets a 10-year deal to sign with the Angels. He was 30-plus at the time. They haven't gone anywhere close to the playoffs. Mike Trout signing a big contract. I don't know if they'll get anywhere close to the playoffs, even with Mike Trout in the mix. A-Rod then goes to the Yankees. Takes him years and years and years to win a championship. They finally won a championship when the Yankees went out and didn't sign one guy. They signed CeCe Sabathia, A.J. Burnett, and Mark Teixeira in the 2008-2009 season. They came in, and that's the one World Series that they had won, and it was against the Phillies in 2009. Haven't won one since. Didn't win one since 2000 before that. So it doesn't always equate. I know we liked it. It was great for ticket sales and fan interest and merchandising and marketing, but did it really help the team? He didn't hit 40 home runs. He's a guy who's hit 40 home runs before in his career, and he's been an MVP, and he's playing at Citizens Bank Park. I needed to see 40 home runs last year. I didn't see it. He played okay. He was good. But for $330 million, one victory, that's what it equated to, one victory. That's their big splash. That was their big splash. Now, they went out and got Zach Wheeler this offseason. I think that's going to help. I think mostly where you are going to see big dividends in terms of who you go out and pay for or acquire takes place in the rotation. We'll see what Garrett Cole does for the Yankees. Of course, the Yankees do that every year. They do that every year. They'll go out and make a free agent signing, a big splash. They'll pay the most for the hottest name out there. And they still struggle winning. I mean, they'll be successful to a degree and they'll win the division and they'll be in the postseason. But, you know, it's rare that they ever get it actually done. They also have a good farm system. They have guys coming through all the time, Sanchez and Judge, and it is hard to win championships. They do it both ways. They have guys coming through the system, and they go out and sign big names, and they still have a hard time winning a championship. It is tough. So now you have the Phillies, who need a veritable plethora of pieces to improve their team, to upgrade the team. They go out and get Bryce Harper, a good move, but it didn't move the needle. Didn't move the needle a lick. And I heard him talking in his interview. He obviously knows and has done his homework. He knows that Alec Bohm's out there and Spencer Howard's out there, and you don't want to give up. You don't want to jump the gun and give up your only two or your two brightest prospects that you have left for a guy you're just going to throw money at. You don't know what the future's going to hold for these two prospects. Having said that, prospects are what they are. You don't know if they're going to pan out. None of them panned out in the Cliff Lee. Carlos Carrasco, maybe, in the first Cliff Lee move. Other than that, prospects are what they are. And especially when they come out of Philly, more often than not, they don't pan out. So do you want to hang on to them? Do you want to move them and get rid of everything you have in the cupboard and kind of go all in, put your cards in, put your chips in? I don't think the team is ready to do it. And we talked about this yesterday, Rob and I. I don't think they're ready to go over the luxury cap yet. I would give it some time. I agreed with Rob. I'm not one to just let's go. Let's throw money after money after money after money. Listen, it is hard to win that way. The Eagles did it in 2017. It was rare. You don't build your team that way. Just like you don't build your football team through free agency and trades, you really shouldn't build your baseball team that way either. It's really about homegrown. Look, the Dodgers do it right. The Astros do it right. The Yankees do it right. The Braves do it right. The Brewers do it right. All teams that are in the mix every year. The Phillies would be going out and, again, getting pieces and doing it by patchwork because they don't have the guys coming up through the system. So, again, Howie Roseman nailed everything in 2017. Since then, he didn't. He was not able to, and because his drafting is poor, has set his franchise back where he is in a position that he has to go out and sign guys. It has to go out and make trades for guys, you know, vested veterans. It's hard to win that way. It's hard to win that way consistently. It can happen, but it's difficult to do that. So the Phillies are where they are. They don't have a lot coming up through the ranks, so they have to kind of piecemeal some things. They're an okay team, maybe a little above average. But they need pitching. Their bottom end of the rotation is still what it is. Same as last year. Maybe Jake Arrieta will be a surprise this year. So then you'll have Nola, Wheeler, and Arrieta as your 1, 2, and 3. That's going to be a big help. We'll see if Velasquez can bounce back and have a better year. But the bullpen has to stay healthy. They were hurt last year, but still I don't see this being a team comprised of championship ingredients at this point. And I think a lot of teams that have that look, that championship ingredient look, are teams that have guys that come up through the system that they develop themselves.
Joe, I have to ask you though. Yeah. You're talking about, and I think it's a valid point, and I don't know if you know this, but I am anti-prospect, as the farthest end of anti-prospect you can get.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. You mentioned all these teams that have drafted well. When is the last time the Phillies drafted Cody Bellinger? When is the last time they drafted Keston Hira? Like you mentioned, the Brewers did. This team has been so imperfect with its draft picks over the last 20 years that, you know, it dates back to Hamels, Utley, Howard, they hit on everybody over like a 4-year span.
That's correct.
And they've done nothing since. They've drafted Aaron Nola.
That is correct.
That's it.
Yeah. So what is your point?
So my point is, you know, you mentioned you don't want to leave the cupboard bare. It's already bare. What's the difference?
Oh, I'm just saying
that if you can trade one of these guys.
I threw it out there. Do you want to leave it bare? Do you not? Do you care? Because I'm kind of with you. Maybe I didn't express that clearly. Is they don't have a lot as it is.
They've got nothing.
They've got nothing. So the only other way you can, so to me, prospects, even when there are some prospects in the mix, to me, they're just, it's a crapshoot. You don't know how they're going to pan out.
So Andrew and I discussed this yesterday, and I look at this and I see four guys in that entire system. You know, outside of guys that are 16, 17 in the low, low ranks. I see four guys that could possibly be contributors.
You want to keep them?
I don't know if I don't. That's the thing is, I know nothing, you know, not enough about these guys. Bohm seems to be the real deal. But if Bohm translates to Chris Bryant, then I don't care. I don't need Bohm because I've got Chris Bryant.
You want to go out and get Chris Bryant?
Absolutely. Okay. In a heartbeat. So to me, I trade prospect for proven. Every time. The last time they traded prospect for proven, they got the best catcher in baseball.
It worked that time. It certainly did. Tyler Zuli behind the glass, big baseball guy. He'll be chiming in the rest of the show. If I didn't make that clear, I am on the side that Tyler Zuli just argued for there, that the prospects are what they are. And I've always had a problem with guys wanting to hang on to this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy instead of pulling the plug for a proven guy, a guy that's already done it. You know, so you're thinking, like in football all the time, do you, you want to keep that first round pick? You want to keep that first round pick? Because you need a wide receiver, and you hope that this guy you have your eye on is going to come through the ranks, and you're going to sit there at number 8, and you're going to pounce on him, and hopefully someday he'll turn into a stud wideout while you have Amari Cooper sitting there, which you can make a trade straight up for, maybe two first-round picks like I think Dallas did. They had the proven commodity. People were like, oh my God, I can't believe Dallas is giving up two first-round picks. Well, first of all, it's not really two. It's one because Amari Cooper was a one, so that kind of crosses off. So you're giving up an additional one of a crapshoot. You already have the bona fide guy. If your guy becomes a bona fide guy, tremendous, but that was a big risk. So to me, people get crazy. It drives me nuts when people are so unwilling to give up this pick or that pick or this, especially with the Eagles, because they don't draft well anyway. What's the difference? What's the difference? At least someone else did their homework, went out, drafted said player. He turned into be a very good player. Great. They did their homework. They did their job. Now you want to cash in on that. Give up your picks. You know, there's no need to hang on to them. I get the other aspect is the money aspect. You know, when you're drafting guys out of college in just a 4-year situation before their next contract where you don't have to pay them a lot of money, whereas Amari Cooper might be coming up for a big payday. But other than that, you know, the homework has been done. It's been done. Don't get too caught up in hanging on to prospects when you have known quantities and known pieces out there that have already been there and done that. I'm Joe Stajak, and I am here till 4. I'm here actually till 8 o'clock tonight. That's when the All-Star game happens in Chicago. Sixers have a couple representatives, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, out in the mix. A little bit of a controversy last night, and I don't put a whole lot of stock in the three-point shooting contest or the dunk contest, but I hate to see injustices, and we'll talk a little bit about that on the other side. He's Tyler Zuli behind the glass, taking your call, 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stajak, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show. Joe Stasiak in the house. Till tonight's All-Star game between Team LeBron, Team Giannis. Speaking of Giannis, now there's a guy who's not the big if. He's the big money. He's the guy who shows up every night with that same intense look on his face. The guy who wants to be the best player on the court every night. And I'm sorry, I just don't see that in Joel Embiid, unfortunately. I just don't. And I hate to keep going back to it, but I don't see it. That's why I think that I'm concerned for this team the rest of the way, the 76ers. And Ben Simmons will also be playing tonight. They're taking a little bit of time off after a big win over the Clippers last week. The 76ers now again 25-2 at home, and on the road they are 9-19. They're 12.5 games out behind the Bucks. Fifth place, like I said, in the East. Two games in front of the Indiana Pacers. A game and a half behind the Heat. And they shouldn't be behind the Heat, by the way, guys. This is a team who almost went to the conference finals last year. Jimmy Butler leaves, goes to the Heat, which wasn't a real strong team to begin with. Now, all of a sudden, they're better than the Sixers. Sixers have two pieces, like serious pieces. They should be better. Sixers should be better than they are. They're not as good as last year, and that's one of the reasons I came into the season not as optimistic. And they've proven that. They're just not as good as last year. They don't have the talent. They need better players. It's that simple. You know, you can talk about what I talked about and Brett Brown not having the Kyunes to kind of discipline the troops and Ben Simmons being content to not, you know, go outside of his comfort zone and shoot the basketball, and Joel Embiid being a drama queen and whatnot. But, you know, obviously both very good players, a decent head coach. Al Horford, nice backup to Joel Embiid, can play the four, but he's a little old, a little slow. The team got some help shooting with Alec Burks and the little dog, Glenn Robinson, the third, but still, they're undermanned in terms of a perimeter game. So they just need better players. They need more talent. It's like the Phillies. There's no tricks. There's nothing really to figure out. They need better players. The Eagles need better players. They need more talent. So to me, it's not the Sixers' year. It's not, they're not ripe for the rest of the league is not ripe for the taking. I think it's Milwaukee's year. I think Milwaukee took a step towards the finals last year. They took a 2-0 lead over the Raptors in the conference finals. They ended up losing 4 straight. Can't hardly blame them. I mean, it was Kawhi's year last year. Kawhi and Pascal and Siakam and the rest of that, Van Bleet. That team, who is also very good this year after just going on a 14-15 game winning streak. It was their year last year. I think it's Milwaukee's year this year. I don't know where the Sixers are going to end up, but I think they need to have some changes at the top in terms of the head coach. For the life of me, and I say this all the time, if you have a team where the inmates are running the show, then you're not going to go very far. I mean, Brett Brown's a player's coach, but he should demand, and I thought this was going to happen, he should demand that Ben Simmons be shooting the ball outside of 12 feet. Three-pointers, fine, but outside of 12 feet, you want to expand your game. He's got to get better. Oh, he's very good at what he does. He's obviously content to be that good at taking the ball to the rim and finishing. The coach shouldn't be content with that. We were led to believe we were going to see him shoot more this year. He hasn't. The coach is responsible for that. Coach says, student does. Not happening here. How is Ben Simmons being allowed to get away with this? That's what I don't get. That's a fireable offense right there, Brett. You should be drawing up plays for him. Son, you take the shot right here. If you don't, you're going to be sitting right here next to me. That's as simple as that. He doesn't have the balls to say that to one of his top two guys. To his two lieutenants, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, he doesn't have the balls to stand up to them. He just doesn't. Sorry. If that sounded a little harsh, Brett Brown doesn't have the balls to stand up to Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid. And that's a problem. Because that's a chain of command issue. Now you got Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons running the show with Brett Brown guiding the ship. That's not how it should be. I'm not so sure Brett Brown was a championship coach anyway, but now he's a guy who's letting the players get away with what they want to do, how they want to play. Joel Embiid wants to come in overweight again, not be in the greatest shape of his life. Maybe play when he's not, when he shouldn't be playing. And to me, that's the head coach. Ben Simmons gives it more effort to me, in my opinion, night in and night out. But he hasn't been able to expand his game. Why? Because he hasn't wanted to. If he wants to expand his game, you will see him trying to expand his game, trying to get better. He needs to get better. You can't win with a point guard who can't shoot. Give me the last team who's won with a point guard who can't shoot the basketball outside of 5 feet. Doesn't happen. Won't happen. Until that changes, nothing's going to change. Nothing changes if nothing changes. It's as simple as that. So that's frustrating to me. If you want to chime in and kind of vent on that situation and that issue, because that just drives me up the wall. I can't understand how that's been allowed to happen. And, you know, kick it up a step. Elton Brand has allowed that to happen. Elton Brand has enabled Brett Brown to enable Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. If I'm Elton Brand, hey, coach, no. We're in this together. I'm sure he talks to him every day. Elton Brand's not some suit. He's a former player, played at Duke, real smart kid, played in the league forever, played for the Sixers, played for the Clippers, has a decent resume, knows what he's doing. Coach, we need our point guard to get a lot better. He's not getting any better if he's being allowed to do what he wants to do, to stay in his comfort zone. I saw the tapes. I saw all the releases, the Ben Simmons releases last summer, all of the three-point shots he was taking, all the jump shots in the gym. I know you can put your best five shots together and you can look like, you know, you can look like Ray Allen. Fine. But he put those tapes out for a reason. Here I am. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what you're going to see. I mean, he's the one who promoted himself. All of a sudden, it push comes to shove, and he cowers. Puts his gun back in his holster. And the coach said, pats him on the back and says, yeah, no problem. We'll get there at some point. Well, if I'm the general manager, I'm not letting Brett Brown get there after this season. I'm not. They would have to go on a serious, serious championship run for Brett Brown to retain his job if I'm Elton Brand. If nothing else, a change needs to be made. A change needs to be made. This team is, to me, has gone as far as they can go. You can see the problems. The problems still exist. You know, JoJo's a drama queen. Now he's getting into it with the fans a little bit because they're getting frustrated with him. He's kind of thin-skinned, so he's going back at it with them. And there's always been a cohesiveness between the fans and Joel Embiid. Like, I got your back, you got mine, and now there's a little bit of separation. I think they've kind of smoothed it over a little bit, but still, it's there, and you're going to see more of it. As long as Joel Embiid remains immature and Ben Simmons the same, I know they're kids, but they are the leaders of this team. At 23, 24, and 25, I know you're young. You're not like the 28, 29-year-old veterans that normally lead a team into the next phase or next stage. But they have to do that. They're the leaders of this team. Who else can be the leader of this team? Where are the leaders? Hal Horford has been here 5 minutes. Josh Richardson's been here 5 minutes. Horford's old and slow. Richardson's he's an okay player. Where's the leadership? Where's the leadership on this team? It usually goes to the best player or best players, who happen to be Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But they're not cut out for the leadership role. Not even in a just watch what I do and follow me. You don't necessarily want to watch what they do and follow them. One of them has no interest in getting better. and the other does his thing when he wants to do his thing, in my opinion. There's no leadership, and there's no alpha dog. There's no one who's going to grab anyone by the throat or by the shirt and say, that's not what we do here. This is what we do. This is how we're going to play. This is how we're going to win. Jimmy Butler was that alpha dog. They don't have that alpha dog. Who's going to do that? Ben Simmons going to go up and grab somebody? Really? Joel Embiid? Well, in between sips of his chocolate chip milkshake, he's going to go grab somebody? Yeah, the team has issues. I'm sorry. I can't listen to anybody anymore. These fans say, well, they can still make a run and be a conference finalist if this... Look at them. Are you watching this team? How they're constructed? How they are told to play? How they are allowed to play? The talent level, the leadership, the alpha dog or lack thereof, the head coach, the chain of command. Why does anyone think this team still has the talent to go out and become a contender? I'd be shocked if this team contended for anything this season. So I think we need to start kind of getting our brains around that now, that this team needs a lot of things to have happen to them before they are ready to take the next step. I'm Joe Stasiak. I'm here till 8 o'clock tonight taking a break. We're talking Sixers basketball. We can talk some Phillies if you want. I still want to get to that controversy around the dunk contest last night with Aaron Gordon. And the situation where he got jobbed a little bit after his last dunk, which was an amazing dunk, and he got jobbed in 2016 too as well. I know it's a slam dunk contest, but I want to talk about it a little bit and what your thoughts were, because I hate a good scandal. I got to be honest, I hate conspiracies and injustices, and as small as it is. He got jobbed again last night, and it was ridiculous, and it was embarrassing on national TV. We'll get to that on the other side. I'm Joe Stasiak. I'm here till 8 o'clock tonight. Stick around.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
The process. Yeah, good luck with that. Joe Stasiak back in the house with Tyler Zulu behind the glass. Taking your call 610-632-0975. Oh, the process. Still an incomplete. And until Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons move on, we will not know if the process was a success or a failure. Right now, again, I give it an incomplete because it's still hanging around. The Sixers have yielded two transcendental players, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, both flawed in my opinion, but still very good, very impactful players, and they have the team fifth in the Eastern Conference right now with 24 games remaining. We shall see if they can turn their road record around. Right now, 9-19 versus 25-2 at home. Quite the dichotomy. We also have a Twitter poll up right now. I'm going to hand it off to my esteemed producer to explain what the Twitter poll is.
So our question for you guys today is centered around your conversation about, you know, trading prospects or not trading prospects. When it comes to baseball, and particularly this Phillies team, this current Phillies team, are you willing to give up a few prospects they have, the few prospects that they have, to make an MLB trade? So we have just over 400 votes already. 55% say yes, trade the prospects. 45% say no, keep the prospects.
And we don't know who we're trading for, right? We're just saying in theory.
In theory, yeah. So the reason that I put an MLB trade, meaning a trade of the ilk of Chris Bryant, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Chris Bryant.
Gotcha. Thank you. That was Tyler Zuli, folks. In fact, you can go on to our Twitter page and chime in, and we'll give updates on that question and the answer totals as we go along. Steve Callis from Callis Remarks with Joe Stasiak and Steve Callis, my podcast partner, coming on at 5:08 in that area. We'll talk about a plethora of subjects, one being the tainted slam dunk contest last night. Aaron Gordon and the kid from Miami. His name is escaping me right now. But
Derek Jones.
Nah, thank you, Derek Jones. Aaron Gordon did a he leaped over Taco. What was Taco? Taco Fall.
Yep.
The kid from the Celtics. He leaped over him, took a basketball over his head between his legs, and threw a ball down. In other words, showing off his leaping ability. Whereas Derek Jones did a windmill. This was a special round because it was tied, and both players, I think, got a perfect score in their first dunk in the special round, and the second dunk, Derek Jones did a windmill. He got a perfect score. No, he got a 48. He got a 48 out of 50. Aaron Gordon does this thing. He brings out Celtics center Taco Fall, and he jumps over him between, like kind of like Vince Carter did live, except Gordon got up even higher. Amazingly, how you're up that high, he still looked like he was floating, going on his way. But he didn't look like he needed a whole lot of push off the basketball, too, off the shoulders of Fall to get up even higher. An incredible dunk. There was a delay for the score to come out. There was some talk that the judges were trying to set it up as a tie to kind of fix it, which would have been a problem for me anyway. I don't like fixing games. If you think Gordon had a better dunk, why are you going to then, you know, give Jones half of the credit? I think Gordon should have won the whole thing then. But he comes out, not only does he not tie, he gets a 47. He gets a 47 and loses the contest. He got squeaked by Zach LaVine in 2016 as well. I know it's a dunk contest. I know it's not what it used to be when Dominic Wilkins and Spud Webb and Michael Jordan used to participate, when the real dunkers used to participate. I'm not saying these guys aren't real dunkers, but those guys were known for their dunking, and these guys are just incredible athletes, and there's plenty of them in the NBA, but not everyone participates. But I mean, watching Aaron Gordon the last few years, just ridiculous. Derek Jones was ridiculous, but Aaron Gordon should have won the whole thing, and he doesn't, and still has never been given a real good explanation as to why. Not only did he not tie, which I think the judges had come out afterwards and said, well, they kind of alluded to the fact that they were trying to fix it and make it a tie, and they screwed that up, and they gave him a 47, and again, dunk contest. It's an exhibition, and not even a good one anymore, because it used to have the stars. Now they have some pseudo stars, although it's still pretty impressive. Believe me, it's impressive watching these guys. And Gordon gets jobbed, and we'll have Steve Callis come on and talk about that a little bit more on the other side. Tyler, let me get your thoughts on that.
First off, I'm not sure if you saw this or not. Ramona Shelburne tweeted out a little while ago. She spoke to Taco after the dunk. It wasn't planned.
You're right.
Aaron Gordon pulled him out of the stands. Taco Fall said he was afraid for his life.
Of course. I'd have been.
I mean, he's 7'5", I think
incredible.
He is. So to get over his head, you've got to be able to, not vertically because you've got to run, but you've got to be able to jump seven. I mean, to feel comfortable, it's got to be 7'7". You know, because 7'6", you're...
Right, you're scooching.
You got nothing.
You're scooching.
You know, quite honestly, these dunk contests and the skills competition, they don't really do it for me.
They don't do it for me.
They never have. You know, you mentioned they have like the big time dunkers. When Vince Carter was in it, that was like the pinnacle for me, because Vince Carter is still, in my opinion, the greatest dunker of all time. And I don't think it's close.
It's incredible.
But, you know, 3-point competition, there's nobody defending you, dunk competition. It's really gotten to the point where, like you said, they're athletes. At this point, to really amaze someone, somebody's going to have to do a flip or something crazy,
something
like, you know what I mean? And it's
different.
Almost impossible, but it's going to have to happen. These things, like, to me, they're athletic specimens at this point.
Specimens.
So it's not as entertaining as it used to be.
What'd you think of him getting jobbed, though?
I think it was a total scam.
Total scam.
I think the guy should have won outright.
What do you think led to the scam?
You've got subjective voting on an objective event. And what I mean by that is, yes, I understand that it's fun and it's an exhibition, like you said, but you have people who are making a decision based on how they feel subjectively on what should be, you know, like if you score a bucket, it's worth 2 points here, it's worth 2 points in Boston, it's worth 2 points in Utah. In an event like this, you've got subjective people who are making subjective opinions that can, you know, tweak one way or the other, you know, 1 point here, 1 point there. I don't like that.
I'm sorry. I don't know how a windmill can hang in there with what he did over Taco Fall, who's 7'5", like you mentioned, and just the sheer athleticism to get up and leap, almost like leapfrog over a 7'5" guy, take the ball off his shoulders and then dunk. You're still hanging in the air. You're not like piggybacking off him. You don't stop and you sit on his shoulders. You're still going up. You might get a little push with the ball. I don't see how that could objectively be graded in the same category as a windmill dunk, which you see all the time. But I just thought it was creative, and I thought it was incredible, and thought he should have won, even though I don't really care. It's an exhibition. It's kind of cool to watch. I like when they become spectacles where you've never seen these things before, these ridiculously gifted athletes do some of the things that they do. But I liked it back in the day. I like when Mike was dunking. I like when Muggsy Bogues, or I think it was Spud Webb, won the dunk contest, and he's like 5'10", still getting up high enough to do all the things, ball under his leg, it was windmill around and dunk. I mean, a guy who's like less shorter than I am. And I hate to see guys get jobbed like that. It's the second time he's been jobbed. But so another conspiracy theory plagues the NBA. And we'll talk about that a little bit on the other side. I know, Bill, hang in there, man, from Swanksville. You want to talk some Sixers? We will get to you on the other side. And Steve Callis comes up at 5:08. We'll get through a bunch of subjects, including the marred slam dunk contest last night. And we'll also get into some serious talk about the 76ers and what they have to do when they come back from break to make a serious, serious run. All right, I'm Joe Stasiak. I'm here till 8 o'clock tonight, folks. Stick around.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.